Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Good evening and very welcome to the show. Firstly, thanks a lot, Ian and Dave, for driving us through the afternoon. It is Monday, June 17th. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On, coming up between now and 7pm. Keith Tracy is in studio to cast his eye over the latest Euro 2024 drama. Austin O'Malley chats Gaelic football with the preliminary All-Ireland Senior Football Championship quarterfinals now known. Stephen Ferris reflects on a dismal end to the season for both Leinster and Munster, while Raimi Burns is with us to review Rory McIlroy's US Open disappointment. We'll also wrap up all of today's sports news headlines. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we are on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome to the show. Great to have your company here in 2FM as we are with you for an hour of sport between now and 7pm. Keith Tracy and Austin O'Malley are also with us. As I mentioned, we're chatting Association Football and Gaelic Football. Keith Tracy, how are you?
I'm great, Shane. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Austin, how's the form?
Wonderful, yeah. Yeah, good. Really good form.
Good, good, good. As is tradition of a Monday, gentlemen, weekend sporting highlights. Before we get into a big competition, I'm going to be giving away a great prize very shortly. But Keith Tracy, what was your weekend sporting highlight for you?
Am I allowed to talk League of Ireland? I know it was a Thursday.
Yeah, do you know who you're talking
to? It seems so long ago though, doesn't it? I will go for the Pats last minute win against Shamrock Rovers. And you know, on the face of it, on paper, you would expect Rovers, people keep talking about them clicking into gear and, you know, hitting top form and you know, getting themselves back into the title race. But for Pats, they've had a couple of sucker punches with the Bows last minute draw and then the Shelbourne last minute defeat. So I think it was really important from a coaching and a managerial point of view that you want the lads to buy into what you're doing. A big part of coaching and managing is getting the players to buy in. So the fact that Pats have got the last minute winners against Shamrock Rovers and competed really well within the game, I'm sure Stephen Kenny has got a lot of those players on side in the dressing room. So I'm expecting a bigger and stronger St. Pats from the restart.
Is the break coming at the worst time?
Just as they go and beat the champions, playing really well, Stephen and Stephen Kenny will be thinking, okay, can we go and kick on now and, you know, really spark our season into life? But yeah, the break has come, so it is what it is. But look, Stephen will have the lads on the training ground now for an extended period, and like I say, I expect them to get stronger.
Well, the break has come, we can all watch some Euro action as second half has just kicked off. Slovakia is still leading Belgium by 1-0. Austin O'Malley, what was your weekend sporting highlight?
I think mine definitely, look, all my energy and focus yesterday was on the Hyde. I think Mayo and Dublin, just what they served up, I thought it was an absolute kind of thunderous affair. It gave us so much. It was a game that was just franked with some great moments and great performances. And you know, I suppose Mayo seduced and got Dublin to the Hyde, and you know, I think just the atmosphere and the energy around the place, it was brilliant. It was a standout, and it kind of, I suppose, whetted the appetite for what's to come now that we're heading into the knockout stages. It really did send a flare up in terms of what the cut and thrust of championship is about.
Absolutely, it's good to have those games, and hopefully there's more entertainment to come. Austin, you'll be previewing all of the prelim quarterfinals, reflecting on a big weekend, chatting Tailteann Cup semi-finals as well. Keith, you're going to keep keeping an eye on Belgium Slovakia, as I mentioned, just kicked off, 47 minutes played as well, Slovakia leading 1-0. Romania defeating Ukraine earlier today as well, so a bit of a shock perhaps in that, or perhaps not. I will get Keith's opinions on that a little bit later on. Speaking of League of Ireland news today, the European draws will be conducted tomorrow. Shamrock Rovers in Champions League qualifying, and they have been in their mini pairing or their mini grouping, and the pots were decided, so Shamrock Rovers can meet either a Slovenian opponent, Larne of Northern Ireland, FK Panevi of Lithuania, Víkingur Reykjavík of Iceland, or Dudelange in Luxembourg. The draw tomorrow, as I mentioned. St. Pat's, your weekend highlight, key day, are through the second round of qualifying the Conference League, so they will have to wait until Wednesday for that draw. But Derry City and their possible opponents in the first qualifying leg are Ballytown of Wales, Faroe Islands, a trip to the Faroes, Stjarnan of Iceland, VPS Vaasa of Finland, or Brno's Magpies of Gibraltar. And for Damien Duff's Shelburne, well, Shells fans could be off to Iceland, Luxembourg, San Marino, possibly the first League of Ireland team to play in San Marino, as I say that with no hint of confidence in that statement, St. Joseph of Gibraltar, or Crusaders, short trip up the M1 if they were to draw Crusaders as well. So that one's tomorrow afternoon. So yeah, lots to look forward to for League of Ireland clubs. And in rugby, Hugo Keenan and Andrew Smith have both been included in the Ireland men's sevens squad for the Olympic Games, while former Meath footballer Vicky Wallace missed out on the women's panel. Leinster fullback Keenan and Connacht wing Smith were previously part of the sevens programme and reintegrated back in the James Topping squad last month. Harry McNulty, who was one of seven players set to become a double Olympian, will captain Ireland men, while Lucy Rock will lead Ireland women as Alan Temple-Jones' side prepare for their maiden Olympic appearance in Paris. Having played key roles in qualification for Paris, Amy Lee Murphy, Crow, Stacey Flood, Emily Lane, Bavine Parsons, Erin King, Vicky Elms-Kinlan, Eve Higgins and Megan Burns are all included, while Katty Baker has made a strong comeback from a long-term knee injury, and teenager Alana Fitzpatrick, who made her senior debut last summer, completes the travelling squad. The pool draws for the Rugby Sevens tournament take place on June 23rd. Full details on the RT Sport website. Now, I mentioned at the start, we have a great competition on today's show, and indeed all week, because this week on Game On, we've got some fantastic prizes to give away, all thanks to Shure, official partner of UEFA Euro 2024. And thanks to Shure, we've got a 55-inch LG Smart TV to be won every day this week. So for a chance to win, all you've got to do is figure out which player we're talking about from the following clues. This player is 20 years old. His number at Birmingham City has been retired, and he has just won the Champions League with his club team. If you know the answer, text the word SURE, your answer, name and email address to 51552 right now, and we'll announce the winner before the end of the show. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for all of the details.
Game on.
Golf. It's been rock solid. Short putts all day long.
So we are chatting golf in the company of Remy Burns, former European Tour pro, now head pro at Malahide Golf Club. And we have just heard the commentary of that putt on the 16th. Remy, what was the overriding emotion watching Rory come up short last night?
Oh, incredible. I was dreading this phone call, this text message this morning from you. So it's just a very unfortunate hour golf, and just one of those things that just didn't go right for him the last four holes. I was really disappointed at his tee shot on the par 3 15th. You know, to hit it over the green on that hole, I thought was quite, you know, at that level, at that, in that type of heat of the battle, I think that was the shot that made him a little bit unnervy. Mm-hmm. You know, he made a good four in the end. He was very lucky with his lie over the back of the green, and I didn't really mind the putt in the last, because it was a difficult putt left to right, but the little putt 16, it was just one of those sort of brain dead moments in sport where your mind just forgets about what the hands are doing, what the club's doing, and unfortunately he paid a big price from DeChambeau, knowing that he three putted, he had another chance, especially when he had a two shot lead the hole before. So it's a very saddened evening, you know, especially a lad that you know a long, long time, and he's a great service to the game, and you know, to do what he's done his whole life, and not to win a major for nearly 11 years now, was just an unfortunate, the one that got away, a very, very unfortunate situation. And I don't know how he's going to deal with it. He's dealt with lots of things before, but this is certainly a huge, you know, do you want to call it a blemish or a huge moment in his career? You know, it'll go probably one way or the other. Let's hope it goes up and he goes to Troon and wins. But it was just an extremely horrifying last four holes. You know, last night is one of the worst watches I've ever watched in golf. It was just horrendous.
Yeah, I think I read on Twitter that Rory was 496 for 496 putting inside 3 feet this season. Before that miss, you mentioned it's just a moment where you're kind of, your hands and your brain don't link up. Like, you've played golf at the highest level. Is it nerves, or is it like, how do you not justify it? How do you kind of describe that?
I personally think it's nerves. You know, like Rory. He does get nervous, like we all get nervous, and he's Navy SEAL trainer. He reads a lot. He's really well controlled on the golf course, has been for maybe inside. He just had a bad stroke. Just the hands just stopped working and the ball went left. He may have hit it through the break, people think, or Nick Faldo said he might have pulled it a little bit, whatever. But under those circumstances, it was a horrifying miss, especially when he's putting for birdie. And it just obviously unsent the nerves. But I still go back to that 15th hole. That was one shot where it's like playing the road hole in St. Andrews. You just play it short left and you take your medicine, take your two putts. And that probably unnerved and make him a bit nervous. But, 18, he hit driver up. I mean, he had a difficult putt. He played a great chip. He chipped really well the last 10 holes. It saved him a little bit on 10, 11, 12, 13. You know, he chipped superb. But to get a two-shot lead, and especially when he's playing with a golfer who's hitting the golf ball all over the park, really, he never hit a fairway, really, the last bar 16, DeChambeau. But unfortunately, he just came up shy. And it's just, it's just one of those like horrendous moments in sport. Such a huge following, especially this side of the pond. You could tell by everybody today, it was like somebody nearly died. It was like a death in the golfing fraternity today. Mm. The fact that Rory didn't win the US Open, he had become so close last year and really, really, really close this year.
You mentioned earlier this can go either one of two ways. If this is the toughest one to take in terms of defeats and one that will give permanent nightmares, how do you feel he will react? Because the last time he blew up so badly, he went on to win the next major. So there is a bit of hope in that regard.
I mean, he's a very smart kid. I mean, knowing him, and maybe people the punters that don't know him, he's a really intelligent kid. He's very, very on the ball. He wears his heart to the sleeve. I mean, I was a little bit disappointed that he got off out of the parking lot last night so quick. But look, we've all done that. I can understand that. That's fine. He'll just have to recess. He's got Troon coming up. He's got this week, I think, if he plays. He's had his low moments before in the sport, and he's bounced back from very low moments, especially Whistling Straits at the Ryder Cup, where, you know, he had tears in his eyes, obviously crying after the Sunday singles. That was a low moment, and he comes back. Like, he's an extremely... We all know how naturally gifted golfer he is. And, like, he played the better golf last night. Unfortunately, somebody just caught him, and he didn't get in with the right number. But this is going to take a lot. This is going to take a huge amount of going into a quiet room, a quiet place, talking to whoever he listens to, you know, whether it's his father or Harry or whoever is close to him, to try and, you know, get back into the motor car, whatever way you want to call it, and start driving again. Like, no one died. It's not a car crash. There's people in sport we've seen worse off after losing something. I mean, it's not life or death, but in the moment of your sport, you're trying to get the fifth major, you haven't won for so many years, he's won so many tournaments, defining part of his career, it will be tough, and it must be very difficult. He's playing golf since he's a very young child at a very, very high level, and it's very hard to keep that level of intensity going all the time. How he's done it for so long is phenomenal, to be able to carry that out for so many years, or Padraig Harrington carrying out for nearly 35 years, nearly 40 years. But it's going to be tough. But he reads a lot of books. He reads a lot about psychology, and hopefully that backbone and obviously talking to his manager or talking to his family and trying to get... But it must be very, very, very disheartening, you know, for that to happen, you know, with all the personal stuff going on in his life as well. There's a lot of emotion, I'm sure. And this is probably some of the emotion he didn't really need to deal with. This is one that he just should have just popped away, one fifth major on to Troon, you know, going just sailing through life. But, you know, life just doesn't work this way, especially in sports sometimes.
Yeah. Raimi, stay in the line. I just want to bring Austin O'Malley into the conversation. Austin, if you have your performance coach hat on, and Raimi was describing brilliantly there, to be fair, on the emotions that Rory might be going through. As a performance coach, then, how would you pick yourself up from this?
Yeah, I think the key thing for Rory really will be that sort of post-action review now. And Raimi mentioned it there, the dark room, but the idea that he goes away now and he processes this and he spends time, you know, and the hard questions are really where he'll have to ask himself, you know, where did his mind go to in that last section, you know, where when he missed those shots? What was his internal dialogue? Was he overly conscious, you know, in terms of, we always say that your psychology impacts your biology, so leading you to play a little bit tight, or he was a little bit off, or did the lens widen? You know, we seen him, you know, in the earlier part when he was hunting down. He had four birdies and five holes. He was chasing. He looked like he was very narrow focused and he was in the zone. But it appeared in the last, you know, those two that he missed, that he could have got just a little bit external and a bit future focused, maybe thinking, maybe I have this in the bag, what's to come, and the bit of stuff that goes with it. So the big thing for Rory in this, for me, and I suppose from working as a performance coach, you always want to sit down post-match or post-event with the player, and that they fully appreciate and understand where their mind went, where their body went, what were they feeling, what were they thinking, what was their internal dialogue at that moment in time, and to recognise that and to be able to process it and to understand then going forward, well, if I arrive in this situation again, this is how I'm going to manage this, and so on. It would be interesting to see, you know, if Rory, like in his prep, do they, you know, in terms of the visualization of these scenarios, being one ahead, being two ahead, or coming from behind, to really to have been there before you're actually there. We often say through the process of, you know, having just a mental tool to go to be able to use in that moment. But look, it was tough. But I've always said with these type of things from a performance perspective is that, you know, if you're brave enough to unpick this, you know, it's a gift wrapped in thorns. You can learn from it and you can come back, and I've no doubt he will again, and that he will go on down the line and he will win a major. But it's about the learning from it now. Yeah, because the quality is there. It's just that final little bit around, I think, the mentality and the mindset to be able to close out.
Well, I think we all hope that Rory will be back winning a major. Before I come back to you, Raimi, let's hear from the winner of the US Open, Bryson DeChambeau.
Rory's one of the best to ever play, and being able to fight against a great like that is pretty special. For him to miss that putt, I'd never wish it on anybody. It just happened to play out that way, and he'll win multiple more major championships, there's no doubt. And I think that fire in him is going to continue to grow. And I have nothing but respect for how he plays the game of golf, because, to be honest, when he was climbing up the leaderboard and he was two ahead, I was like, uh-oh. But luckily, things went my way today.
Bryson, you obviously, like Rory, had a bit of a wait between winning majors, and you had some near misses as well, obviously, at the PGA. I just wondered, how does that affect a player kind of mentally, both on and off the court, knowing you've got that kind of hanging over you? And what did you find helped you to kind of break that duck?
I'm sure it'll fuel Rory's fire even more. He's a strong-minded individual. For me, it was knowing how good my game is and how great of a place it's in, and just continuing to execute and knowing that the statistics would hopefully fall my way. Still hope, you know, golf is it's a game of luck. There's a lot of luck that has to happen and go your way out there. But I knew if I could give my 100% effort on every single shot, I'd give myself a good chance this week, just like I did at the PGA, just like I did at the Masters. And Rory's going to do it. I'd love to have a lot more battles with him. It'd be a lot of fun. But Rory's going to do it at some point.
Raimi, final word to yourself, just on the winner. We did talk at length on Rory, but for Bryson, how good was he, or was he fortunate? You mentioned he was far from the fairways quite often.
I mean, he plays a one-dimensional game. I mean, people don't realise how good he is, a short game. He went out there, he was fighting emotionally. You could see him, he was on the edge of the, you know, the boxing ring a lot. He was on the ropes, as you call it, and he was able to get back up and bounce off the ropes and get back at it again. And I mean, he did say there in his interview, you need a little bit of luck, and he got a lot of luck, especially down the stretch last night, the way it just happened. One player faltered and one player just hung in there. He shot 71. It wasn't the greatest score, I'm sure, he would have liked to have been a lot better than that coming down the stretch, but he fought hard, he knew the score, he was watching the scoreboard, and you know, he's a very, very emotional golfer, doesn't leave one, he's got the edge in everything, his equipment, mind, and back to what a gentleman was talking about, that sort of inner strength, he had that inner strength down the last few holes last night, was able to hang on, and then of course, he played the shot of his life. I mean, that particular shot, the hardest golf shot in golf is the long bunker shot, bouncing off a downslope to lead with an uphill 3.5 footer to win the US Open was phenomenal. And for credit to him, he's won a lot of fans. He's He's part of Live Golf. He's bringing new fans into the game. He went and bounced around the 18th last night, showing off the trophy. Extremely emotional win, and let's hope he brings more people into the game of golf. But Rory, as I know him, he will bounce back. He's coming into the peak performance months of his whole career. He always plays well May, June, July, August. And let's hope he can go to a course he finished fourth on 7 or 8 years ago in Troon and maybe pull off another claret jug.
Here's hoping for now. Remy Burns, thanks so much for taking the call. Really appreciate it. Brilliant chatting, as always. We're taking a short break then. We're chatting Euros with Keith Tracy. Slovakia still leading Belgium 1-0, but anytime I look up at the screen, it seems like it is all Belgium. So we'll get the latest with Keith in a few moments. Stick with us here in Game On.
Game On.
Football.
Now, Austin O'Malley is still with us. We'll be chatting Gaelic football very shortly. Stephen Ferris will be joining us for rugby. But now it is time to chat Association Football. Keith Tracy, you've been keeping an eye on Belgium, Slovakia. I mentioned before the break, Slovakia leading 1-0, but it is all Belgium?
Yeah, it's all Belgium at the minute. They've had the ball in the back of the net. Lukaku has actually managed to hit the back of the net this time, but it was given offside after a VAR review. It was just a short corner. De Bruyne at the Trossard. Trossard flings one into the back stick, and Onana wins the header at the back stick, and There's Lukaku to tap it in from a couple of yards out, but VAR have a look, and it's toenail stuff, but I do think he's offside. And then Bakayoko's just had one cleared off the line as well from the Slovakian defender Hanko. So the Slovakians look like they're hanging on a bit, but it also has the air of it's going to be one of those games for Belgium where they just can't score. And a lot of people, you know, I can't get behind Belgium. I think they have some outstanding players. But when you look at Lukaku, when he's not firing, there's not really a plan B to go up the top of that pitch. I love Doku, love De Bruyne, Trossard, Bakayoko, who comes off the bench. All brilliant players. But in terms of goal scoring ability, I don't think they have enough goals in the team to eventually win it. But to keep it where we are now at Slovakia, they should have enough to beat these. But Slovakia have been compact, and they're doing everything you would expect a slight underdog to do.
It would throw the group wide open with Romania beating Ukraine 3-0. I posed that as a shock. I'm not sure how much of a shock that was. I don't think many people would have expected a 3-0 victory anyway.
Yeah, to be honest, I would have been fairly familiar with Ukraine. Obviously, Ireland have entangled with them a couple of times over the last couple of years, and England have played them as well. So I've had my eye on Ukraine. I knew how good they were, but little bit similar to you, Shane, is Romania were quite unknown to me, but they impressed me. They really did. Dragostin at the back, the sports centre half, did really well, and they're winning tackles and celebrating like they're scoring goals. And when you get an underdog mentality like that, and you feel like the backs are against the wall, I wouldn't back against Romania doing something, maybe being able to get out of the group, but you would imagine it would be alongside Belgium. I know there's a couple of best place will go through. So there's a lot to fight for in that group, and you know, nobody will feel like they're out of it. And Romania haven't got their 3 points on the board already. They'll be very confident that they can get over.
Well, there's still 22 minutes plus stoppage time left in this one. Slovakia leading 1-0. Listen, we haven't been on air since Friday. There's been a few matches over the weekend. What have you made of the tournament so far, Keith? Have you enjoyed Euro 2024?
Yeah, I have. I've really enjoyed it. There's been some good games. I thought the Poland and Netherlands games was a good game the other night when Weghorst came off the bench and scored. The English game, obviously, a lot of drama. And I had a little bit of hope for the Scots on the opening day, thinking maybe they could do something against the Germans.
What were you basing that on? Because I also had that feeling. And then I was watching it and my girlfriend at the time, she turned around and said, what are you basing on? I was like, you never know. I was like, I had no stats or anything to back it up
there's
from a footballing side of things.
I think it's just I need somebody to support. Obviously, Ireland aren't there. I can't quite go to the English, so the Scottish are just getting my little bit of a vote. But look, I look at the German team, and rightly you look at them and think they're not quite as strong as Germany have been over the years. But you look at the spine of them, Neuer and goal, Rudy got through the middle, Toni Kroos, Gundogan as well. Again, the question mark I throw at the Germans is, well, Havertz playing as a false nine, or you're out and out striker, is there enough goals in that team? But then they go and hammer Scotland 5-1, and you're thinking, there's plenty of goals in that team. And with Toni Kroos going to, I don't know if it's international retirement or he's going to, you know, just retire full stop, but I wouldn't put it past him being able to orchestrate pulling the strings and guiding Germany to actually going and winning the Euros. It's that famous saying, isn't it? Never write off the Germans. I think they'll go deep, but don't think they have the firepower to win it.
Well, more bad news for Scotland. Ryan Porteous will miss Scotland's final two Euro 2024 group games after his red card in the 5-1 defeat was deemed to be serious rough play. So the 25-year-old Watford defender was sent off, of course, for his tackle on the host captain, Ilkay Gundogan, in the Group A opener in Munich on Friday night. And he is set now to miss Wednesday night's game against Switzerland in Cologne, but will also sit out against Hungary in the Scots final section match in Stuttgart. A bit harsh, two matches in a tournament.
It was a really bad tackle. Yeah. When it happened in real time, I didn't really see it, but then when you know, I probably shouldn't look at it when you slow it down on the replay, but the ball bounces and Gundogan's there. He flies through the air with both studs shown. You know, when the ball bounces in the 6-yard box, you can sort of forgive him for the acting like that, but when the dust settles, you're thinking that was a really, really dangerous tackle. And lucky that Gundogan's ankle didn't actually buckle when he goes flying into him. So yeah, it could have been a tournament ender for Gundogan, which would have been a real disappointment. So I don't think parties can look around and think I've been harshly dealt with there. I think it's a strong red card.
The freeze frame, the photo of it on the RT Sport website, even looking at it, it's like, oof. Mm-hmm. I was actually watching the match in the company of a few Scots, and they were like, oh, that's ridiculous. And then you see the replay, and it was just dead silence.
Yeah, it's undefendable.
Oh, yeah. Say again, Austin.
It was Braveheart stuff.
It was, yes. very much so. England 1-0 against Serbia. What did you make of their performance? They're being analysed at length anyway. It was a good performance from Jude Bellingham, but overall,
yeah, Bellingham was good. Very brave header that he scored. There's a lot of shoehorning going into this this English team. You look at people, the big fallout all of a sudden is Foden. People are saying, you know, do they need to drop Foden and put Anthony Gordon in? I get that chat because Gordon's had such a great season with Newcastle, but you can't just have Phil Foden doing so well over the course of the Premier League season, doing really well in the Champions League, has a dodgy, you know, 90 minutes. I wouldn't say dodgy, he did okay, but Harry Kane didn't play well, Saka didn't play well. There was a lot of players that didn't play well for England, but for some reason it's Foden who has to be the scapegoat. And I just don't get it. And people are saying if Bellingham's going to play in the 10, then Foden can't play. Of course he can. He's played on the left for Manchester City, he can play on the right, he can play as a false nine. I just think that if Trippier is playing left back, he's a natural right footer, so when the ball comes to him, he's going to block off that side of the pitch, so Foden is not going to get as much quick ball as you would like him to. So he's suffering from that a little bit. The Trent Alexander-Arnold getting shoehorned into midfield, I just don't buy it. I don't get it whatsoever. He gave the ball away a couple of times last night. Had Serbia have had their shooting boots on, could have probably found the back of the net. And let's get serious, if they get a Spain, a Germany, a France over the next couple of in the knockout stages, Trent Alexander-Arnold will not be anywhere near the middle of that pitch. So why are you playing him? I think maybe they thought Serbia are going to drop back low and he can dictate sort of a quarterback position, but it just didn't work for me. I think Maynard or Gallagher's a better option in there to run around and just left Foden, Bellingham, Saka, Kane, go and win the game. You don't have to defend, go and win the game. We've two sitters here on the back four. Kyle Walker's recovery speed will be massive for them, but I don't know defensively. Like I was back in the English as we are running into the Euros, but defensively there's so many question marks over their fitness. You know, John Stones been out for a long time. Mark Gay, he's still a novice at international 11. Kieran Trippier's had his own injury worries, and he's now playing at left back. And Luke Shaw, there's an awful lot of pressure going to be thrown on his shoulders when he does come into the starting lineup. So it's all there. I do think England will get stronger and keep going. And end of the day, it was an opening group stage game. They got the 3 points.
Is it a perfect result for them? It's scrappy 1-0. They won't be getting carried away. You won't have the Sky text banners of it's coming home just yet after that. The facile victory.
Yeah, it's only a matter of time though, isn't it, before it's coming home. Because look, they've got 3 points on the board now. You'd imagine they'll be able to get another win, maybe even a draw over the next two games. So they're all but out of the group. Then you're thinking, you know, that's when it will really start to ramp up. It's coming home, the pressure will start coming on it. But I've also seen Harry Kane doing interviews in the meantime for ESPN and sort of leaning into the favourite tag and saying, I'm here to get the golden boot, I want to win it, and we want to win this tournament, which is not the way England would usually go about it. They're quite standoffish in that fact, but the fact that they're saying they want to win it, they think they can win it, I think it's a breath of fresh air. But again, defensively, I'm just worried about them when they come up against the Spains and the France of this world.
We had a bit of a shock at lunchtime today. We're on course for another shock this evening with 15 minutes to go. Slovakia lead Belgium 1-0. Will we have a trio of shocks when Austria play France this evening? Keith, France, I think you're a shout for to go all the way in the tournament?
Yeah, I don't see anybody beating France. I think defensively they're really good. I think they're probably well, other than the Dutch, probably the best well-stacked team defensively, with Konaté, Upa Meccano, Saliba probably won't even play. And when you look at the season he's had for Arsenal, it's quite a statement that he's not even playing. N'Golo Kanté coming back into the French team, I know he's over in Saudi Arabia now, but he smells danger so well. He knows when the play is going to break down, he can go and sweep things up. And with Mbappe, Dembele, Griezmann, Thuram possibly on the left as well, I don't see anybody beating them. And look, Austria are a very good team, but with the likes of David Alaba missing, some of their talismen are out injured, it's an uphill battle that's been made almost impossible. And look, there is times when the French will misfire and not quite play their best. And look, Saudi Arabia beat Argentina in the World Cup, the opening stage of the World Cup, and Argentina went on to beat the World Cup. So it's not all on your first game, but I expect the French to win, and I expect them to win with a bit of style.
Okay, good stuff. That one kicks off at 8 p.m. All the matches, of course, on RT2 and the RT Player. 14 minutes left. Keith, you might stick around and keep an eye on that match for us. We're taking a short break. We're going to chat rugby then. As I mentioned, Keith will keep an eye on Belgium, Slovakia for us. Austin O'Malley is still with us. Lots more to come on the show here on Game On.
Game On.
Rugby.
Now, as RTE Sport journalist Neil Tracy wrote on the RTE Sport website, at the very least, there won't be accusations of complacency against Ireland when they head on their tour of South Africa next month. Silver linings and all that. Talk of an all-Irish final in the URC was greeted like a red rag by the Bulls in Pretoria before the Glasgow Warriors completed a day of shocks. The humble Munster for the second year in a row at Thomond Park. But the Bulls and the Warriors were full value for the wins, and that will only sting Leo Cullen, Graham Rowntree, and probably Ireland head coach Andy Farrell even more. Stephen Ferris is on the line to reflect on the weekend's rugby. Who will be stinging more, Stephen, in your opinion, Leinster or Munster?
Oh, geez, that's a
nice opening question for
get
you.
That question first, option, to be honest with you. But, it was obviously really disappointing for Irish rugby and for everybody. I think the fairy tale final, we were all sort of hoping that it was going to be back down in Limerick with Leinster obviously joining Munster, but it's not to be. I think just the season that's in it, it's probably Leinster. Like, you know, the reigning champions, URC champions, Munster last season had an unbelievable run. You know, they went on an unbelievable run, played some really good rugby, have sort of tailed off a little bit towards the final part of the season with the win over Ospreys and Ulster. They probably couldn't find their best gears, and they didn't manage to do that again against Glasgow at the weekend. But with Leinster buying out, with a dramatic, obviously, late loss to Toulouse in the Champions Cup final, you were sort of hoping that they were going to come good in the URC. And, you know, it's a really disappointing away defeat to the Bulls, who, in fair play to them, they were full value for their victory. Like, they were so, so physical and, you know, brought a lot of nice to their game. Their kicking game was unbelievable. And, you know, they played extremely well against a very talented international side in Leinster, who disappointingly have just come up short yet again for another year in the URC. But that's the way it goes, and you know, it's on the day and who's going to perform the best on the day. And unfortunately Leinster have had a couple of bad days in recent years.
No doubt Leinster will review all of this in detail, and you know, it's probably too much of a stretch to say, oh, is this going to be an end of an era for Leinster? Because then you look at the addition of Tyler Blaindell as a coach, Snyman and Barrett are to come to go again all of next season. But how much will Leo Cullen and the whole setup be questioned for how this has ended, and also that the drought without a trophy continues?
Yeah, and I think it was Donal O'Callaghan. I read a few quotes from him after the game at the weekend, and he was saying, you know, they are the best resourced team in probably world rugby, you know, best coaches, and for them not to deliver every year is really disappointing, and it's not good enough, I think is what he said. And that's really, it's really difficult to not follow along with exactly that. And of course, everybody's disappointed. Like, Leo Cullen can come out and say, you know, after the Champions Cup final, that, you know, this group is growing and it's evolving and, you know, we need to stick together. But, you know, it's every year now for the last three seasons. And even, you know, I think James Ryan interview after the game at the weekend sort of summed it up exactly where Leinster were. And, you know, he was just absolutely distraught that, you know, they couldn't find a way to win, where, you know, it just feels like there's a different a different sort of message being sent out by the coaching staff that, you know, if you keep getting the semi-finals and you keep getting the finals, that, you know, eventually you'll get over the line. And that's right. You know, of course that is true, but just a part of me feels that this Leinster team should be like a Man City and winning it every single season because of the players that they have and because of the resources that they have, the money there as well. And as many people know, there's so many of those players that will be playing for Ireland in South Africa in the summertime, and they will probably be playing at different, you know, at a different level. Whatever reason that is for, we're all not too sure. And you know, that's why we're sort of all starting to question Leinster at the minute, because they've fallen short in too many occasions over the last couple of years.
Mm. Why aren't they the Man City? Why aren't they dominating? Is it just small, minor details and one-off matches, or what do you put it down to?
I think Munster last year went on a cracking run away from home, and were able to back up week in and week out. But if there's been something about Irish rugby and Leinster over the last number of seasons, is that they've struggled to back up, you know, big game after big game after big game. And, you know, look at Ireland's record at Rugby World Cups, you know, pretty similar. I know Six Nations is, people are going, oh, well, we've won Grand Slams, but there's weeks off during those Six Nations, the rest players. There's, you know, a potential match against Italy or Wales to rotate players, where when you have to go back-to-back, you know, for 3 or 4 weeks in a row, the way they had to do in the Champions Cup, and then I know they fielded a slightly weaker side, but then having to go again back-to-back in the Champions or in the URC, it's, you know, anybody you speak to, it says, oh, I'm not sure this Leinster side or Irish side are, you know, able to consistently do it back-to-back, week in, week out. And maybe that's something that, you know, needs to be looked at, the way that the Irish system is at the minute. We all think it's brilliant because, you know, lads are getting, what's it called, the RFU resting protocol that's been brought in, and player welfare, player management, and we all get that. But, you know, what does Razzy Erasmus say? It's all about peaking at the right time. And, you know, unfortunately for Leinster, they haven't done that. And unfortunately for Ireland as well, they haven't done that at Rugby World Cups.
Mm. A final question for you, Stephen, just on Munster. A really strong regular season. So will this campaign overall be viewed as one that got away from Munster?
Yeah, I think so. And the only reason for that is because of the card of the home final. I think Graham Rowntree actually referenced that. You know, that's why it's going to sting so much, is because they put themselves in such a good position after a sluggish start in the URC, top in the league. And he's very much proud of that, and I'm proud of the effort from the lads. But, you know, it's one that's definitely got away, and, you know, they will feel deflated for sure, because, you know, how good would it have been to have been in a URC final at home in Thomond Park, a full house down there, and hopefully put in a much better performance, or hopefully the best performance of the season. So, yeah, I think they'll be bitterly disappointed. And but it just, for some reason, just doesn't feel as the same sort of sting or bite, as Graham Rowntree said, as for Munster as it is for Leinster.
Well, we will leave our conversation there for now. Stephen Ferris, thank you so much for taking the call. Those weekend results combined with Leinster's Champions Cup final loss, I should say, and indeed Ireland's defeats to New Zealand at the World Cup and England in the Six Nations, as Stephen mentioned, form a worrying pattern of Irish sides failing to deliver when it really mattered. However, Belgium have just delivered. Keith Tracy, they've got the equaliser.
Yeah, Lukaku's running off celebrating again. Slightly sceptical, you know, VAR can always come and make you look silly at these times, but the Belgians have got the ball, they're running back to the halfway line, they're convinced it's going to be given. And again, it's just a big long ball forward, it's a good battle between the centre forward, he just drives it across, and it's a lovely finish from Lukaku. If you finish like that throughout the 90 minutes, Belgium would be absolutely out of sight. It's a little pull back to the penalty spot on his left foot, just feeds it into the top corner, uses the defender, just angles it around him. Dubravka in the Slovenia goal is absolutely no chance. Lovely finish. But I'm sure the rest of the Belgian players would be thinking, my God, where's that been for the 90 minutes? Because three big, big chances he's missed within the game. And this, probably the hardest of the three, he made look really easy. And I think that's the frustration with Lukaku. He has it in him, but we don't see it often enough.
Not delivering when it counts, similar to Leinster rugby. Don't see the consistency, Keith. It's all connected. And there's a goal check in VAR here, just as we say. We're taking a short break and we'll be back to you with the VAR results here in Cayman.
on 2FM.
So going into the break, it was Slovakia 1, Belgium 1. Coming out of the break, it's Slovakia 1, Belgium 0. Keith Tracy, what is happening?
VAR has come back into the game again, and it's really, really unlucky from a Belgian point of view. They fling one into the left channel. Openda gets into a bit of a wrestling match with one of the centre halves, and as they're coming together, the ball just flicks up and just brushes off Openda's fingers. I don't think he gains any sort of, you know, advantage because of it, but it does flick off his fingers. And as VAR come over and have a look at it, they have this like
snickometer.
The nickometer, yeah, to try and tell the referee that it has flicked off his fingers, because it was so hard to see. But he had the nickometer anyway, and the referee's clearly like, that would influence you as a referee to see that. But it does flick off his fingers. And for me, you know, if it hit a defender's fingers like that, I don't think there's any way you give a free kick or a penalty. So very, very harsh on the Belgians. Had the ball in the back of the net twice now, and I said it was starting to feel like one of those days for the Belgians. I think even they're starting to feel like that now.
Yeah. I was only saying, poor Lukaku, if he ducks the drone this evening,
yes,
seriously, cannot hold on anything.
It was a great finish.
Seven minutes added on, so there's every chance they could still get some.
Come again.
It will finish before 7 o'clock. Keith, I keep an eye on that. Awesome. We have to talk Gaelic football. You're gonna have no time. We're gonna run out of road. You mentioned at the start of the show, Dublin Mayo was one of your sporting highlights. For Mayo, will they be pleased with the performance and putting it up to the Dubs? Or will they be a bit disheartened with conceding that last minute equaliser?
Yeah, it's look, I mean, it's an interesting one. I think coming into it, most people would have thought, and the narrative was like, if you could, you know, be within shouting distance of Dublin, if you kept them to maybe 4 or 5 points, you know, you'd have been happy coming out there and delivered a performance. But like, as I said at the outset, it was a thunderous affair. I thought Mayo done so much right for so long in terms of, you know, really getting to grasp of Dublin in terms of their matchup. They managed to shackle Brian Fintan with Dunica McHugh. They held Conn pretty well up top. They managed to clamp that third quarter kind of push that Dublin generally do, and they didn't concede a goal. So they've done so much right, and I think there's, when they rake over the video, they'd be happy with so much of it. There's obviously loads of learnings in it still, and like, as I said at the outset, the game was franked with so many big moments, but the moment at the end, the Kieran Kilkenny, when he just scraped the skies.
The fetch
was, it was just literally, he went up through like a forest of players, pulled it down, and then had the presence of mind to slip it to Jack McCaffrey, who fed Baskerville, you know, as a pivot back to McCaffrey, onto Costello, lost his foot and then threw like the smallest of windows, clipped it over of his left. So that will frustrate them, like, to a point. Like, so I suppose I was thinking about this today, and you're kind of thinking, does this sharpen the Mayo axe going into next week, or does it put more timber in the handle kind of way, you know, in terms of that they could be a bit lethargic. Big performance, quick turnaround, Derry line in wait, you know, there's a big groundswell of pressure on Derry at the moment as well. They have an extra day recovery as well, Derry, so it'll be very, very interesting. I would be taking the positives. I think it was a really, really good performance. I think it should sharpen them, and I think it should leave them in good stead going in against Derry next weekend.
Keith, you had your hand in the air there, you worried me.
It was a lovely little ball in. Openda gets down the left wing, and he pulls it back, the Slovakian back four, rush into the 18 yard box, and De Bruyne picks it up, and he just wiggles away from two tackles, managed to get a shot in. But Dubravka, good hands. Had you spilt it, Lukaku was Johnny on the spot, but it was good hands from Dubravka, and Slovakia still have that slender lead.
4 minutes left in that one. Austin, you mentioned Mayo Derry. That is penciled in for Saturday, Castlebar 6:30, Loud Cork Sunday, Inishkeen 3 p.m. Back on Saturday, Tyrone Roscommon in Omagh at 5 p.m. Galway Monaghan then on Saturday as well, Pearse Stadium at 4 p.m. The details for the prelim quarterfinals be played this weekend, I should say. Obviously, the weekend of June 22nd, 23rd. We're flip-flopping from previewing and reviewing. What else caught your eye over the weekend? Because they were fairly one-sided, besides a cracker of a match between Galway and Armagh.
Yeah. I thought, the Galway-Armagh game, there was a lot in it. I thought Galway were brilliant first half. That first 30-35 minutes, I thought, was probably the best 35 minutes of football they'd put together since their All-Ireland performance against Kerry a number of years ago. Like, they looked solid, they were so consistent. Their entries into the Armagh 45 or scored an area, they were really, really, really good. They, you know, and they didn't give the ball away, they were so mechanically with it, and they profited quite well. As I said, they didn't give Armagh any oxygen or energy on turnovers to hit them, and they looked in complete control. You know, up to that kind of 50th minute, they were 5 points up deep in that second half, and then it just looked like that they lost their way in terms of their focus and concentration, went away kind of from what they were doing well. I thought there was a big moment in the game for me. I thought Finnerty's free that he missed when he was teeing it up, I thought thought he didn't have the range for a drop short. They countered, got a score, pressed the kick out, and then Gleeson had a little bit of a blip. Turbot pinched the kick out, fed Tiernan Kelly and goal, and all of a sudden it was game on. And Armagh finished the stronger, I thought. Their bench obviously had an impact, like it has over the last number of weeks for them. In particular, when you look at Stephen Campbell came in, and he obviously got the equalising score in the end. So, but Armagh will probably need to look at themselves. They looked like they were way off it in that first half. They looked like they were almost, anaesthetised. They're tranquilised. They're no pressure. They were very, very standoffish in that. But they got a reprieve, I think, at half time. They got an extra 5 minutes in the dressing room. They're 20 minutes.
Much
so
needed.
Much needed. So whatever was said, I'm sure there was a table or two maybe turned over, and Kieran McGeaney probably delivered a couple of ultimatums, and it re-energised them. But coming out of that again, not to labour the point, but Galway's injuries again could catch them. They lost two. They lost Sean Mulcairns in that game again. Keane Darcy gone again. Sean Kelly not looking himself either. He was withdrawn late on. So it'll be interesting to see how they rebound. And obviously they've Comer out of action at the moment as well.
Monaghan lie in wait for the Tribesmen. Derry, much needed win. They're playing against Mayo, and they're going to need a performance of a lifetime to get anything from Mayo in a prelim quarter final, getting over the line from against Westmeath at the weekend.
Yeah, they really will. And when you look at the score in Derry, 2-7-9 to Westmeath, and it was a game, I suppose, the big score in that was Emmett Bradley's 65th minute goal that kind of turned the tide for them. Westmeath had came hard and had scored 3 points, I think, between the 55th and 59th minute, and it was looking a little bit ominous for them, but they found a way, not scored in heavy. Something that did stand out to me from that game was Shane McGuigan held scoreless again, and that will be a worry for them. I thought Westmeath done an awful lot right in terms of shackling him and closing them out there. So Derry, we know they're under huge pressure. There's a big narrative around them that things aren't what they should be internally. There's pressure on Mickey Hart and all that, but they're a dangerous animal coming to Castlebar next weekend, I think, so Mayo, again, as I said at the outside, you'd hope that Mayo that performance against Dublin has sharpened them, but Derry still have an awful lot of quality there. They played extremely well in Castlebar during the National League, where they bet Mayo by 5 points, and Carvis open for a couple of goals. I think the key to beating Derry, really, if you're to do that, and Mayo will have to look at this weekend, is just to close out that centre channel and no goals. As we've seen, they got two again yesterday, and it was the difference in terms of beating Westmeath.
So Armagh, Dublin, Donegal and Kerry through to the quarterfinals, and Donegal cheering on Tyrone, which I think was very
not something that I think sat well,
but Tyrone did defeat Cork, so it was good news for Tyrconnell men. This weekend there's been a lot of debate over the fixtures. So Croke Park on Sunday, Antrim against Laois at 2 p.m. followed by Down taking on Sligo at 4 p.m. the Tailteann Cup semi-finals, and then the times and venues have been confirmed for the All-Ireland Hurling Championship quarterfinals. They'll be played this Saturday in Semple Stadium, with Dublin against Cork at 1:15 p.m. followed by Clare facing Wexford at 3:15 p.m. Now, there was a motion at Congress to change over. In the end, it just fell, Central Council I should say, it fell just short of the 60% required at 57.4%. In your opinion, Austin, should have been flipped, or does it make much difference when these games are played? They're going to be televised anyway.
Yeah, they're going to be televised anyways, and I suppose we're all Democrats at the end of the day, and it didn't get the necessary numbers that it needed to be flipped. And I suppose are you setting a precedence if they are flipped, then, in terms of what's coming down the line again with different fixtures and so on? I suppose the fact that they are set for Croker, it does sweeten the deal for the Tailteann Cup guys on a Sunday. It's obviously traditionally it's kind of a marquee day for GA and so on, and I'm sure that was at the forefront of their mind when that fixture was set, in terms of maybe your lesser or weaker counties competing in that and getting to Croke Park on a Sunday and so on and that. But I think it probably, it is the right call of sticking with the fixtures
yeah.
and rolling with it, and maybe reviewing it again next year then if it's something they think, if they think that there's change needed on it.
Well, there'll be plenty of review. GA President Jarla Burns said the changes to the All-Ireland Football Championship from 2025 are likely given the lack of jeopardy in the current round-robin format. However, that is a conversation that we no doubt will delve into.
We will delve into it. We ran out of road
this evening. Final word to yourself, Keith Tracy, before I announce the competition winner. It has finished 1-0 Slovakia.
Slovakia have won 1-0. It's difficult to say they deserved it. I do think there was a big element of luck when you look at Lukaku, a goal ruled out for offside, a goal ruled out because of handball, three big chances missed. On another night, you could have easily scored five, and you know there's one or two others of the Belgians that could have easily chipped in. So, although the Belgians won't be happy with that result by a long way, I think they're far from pressing the panic button because they were decent in the game, just didn't have their shooting boots on, Lukaku in particular.
If it wasn't for the snickometer, who knows?
It's all about the snickometer.
That's the word of the day. It's time to announce the winner of our competition now. The player was, of course, Jude Bellingham, and the winner of the 55-inch LG TV, all thanks to Shure, official partner of UEFA Euro 2024, is Michael Byrne. So congratulations to you. And the good news for everyone else is there's another chance to win on tomorrow's show. We will be back tomorrow, 6 p.m. Conan Byrne in studio, Mark Langdon with us as well. Keith, I believe you're back with us Wednesday, so we'll chat to you then. Also, no doubt we'll be chatting to you soon. Ronan Lawler was today's producer. Lorelei Davis was our broadcast coordinator. Beda Da Silva is up next, so do stay tuned to 2FM. But first, we're going to check in with the news desk.